Good morning. Meeting of the House Rules Committee will come to order. The time is 8:34 a.m. on Wednesday, March 5th. Members present are Representative Vance, Representative Costello, Speaker Edgemond, Representative Tilton, Representative Schrage, Representative Kopp, and myself, Chair Stutes. We have a quorum. Please silence your cell phones. We are asking staff and members of the audience not to approach the table. If you need to pass a note, please get a hold of my committee aide, Matt Greening, and he will be delighted to help you out. I'd like to thank Lori Rowland, the House Rules Committee Secretary, and the Juno LIO for teleconferencing support. On the agenda today is House Bill 69, Education Funding Increase BSA. The plan today is to have a very brief introduction of HB 69 version G, adopt and hold a committee discussion on the CS that is currently in the members' packets, consider amendments, and look to the will of the committee. I would note that we have Marie Marks, the drafting attorney from Legislative Legal Services, online to answer any technical questions about the bill. Representative Himshue, would you please come to the table, identify yourself for the record, and provide us a very brief explanation of the root version of House Bill 69, version G.
Thank you, Chair Stutes and members of the committee. I'm grateful for the opportunity to present House Bill 69. I'm Rebecca Himshue. I represent House District 2. House Bill 69 does two things. It starts by inflation-proofing our current BSA, and then it adds $1,000 to that. Then it inflation-proofs again in the next fiscal year 27, inflation-proofs and then adds 404. And then in fiscal year 28, it inflation-proofs one more time, adds 404, and starting in fiscal year 29, it inflation-proofs going forward. And the goal of the bill was to restore funding that has been eroded over the years to maintain all the possible educational opportunities for our students that we can.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Representative Himshue? Seeing none, with that, I would like to put before the committee the committee substitute for House Bill 69. Vice Chair Kopp, could I have a motion, please?
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the proposed Rules Committee substitute for House Bill 69, LS0309/0, as our working document.
Object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Representative Edgemond. Representative Himshue, would you please explain to us the changes between version G and the committee substitute version O?
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair. I left the summary of changes in my office. I'm hoping maybe Matt can provide them. Thank you. Okay. Apologies. Through the chair, the explanation of changes. The title change will now read the following title language, which reflects new sections in the bill relating to open enrollment in public schools, relating to charter schools, relating to an annual report for correspondence study programs, relating to the base student allocation, relating to wireless telecommunications devices in public schools, establishing the task force on education funding, relating to a report on regulation of school districts. In section one, intent language was added specifying that this act shall not be interpreted to permit an education voucher system in accordance with Article 6, Section 1 of the Alaska Constitution. Section 2 amends AS 1403-080A so that a school-aged child is entitled to free public education at their assigned school or a parent-selected school within the district. Section 3 makes conforming changes to sunset the open enrollment provisions after 3 years. Section 4, we added new subsections to AS 1403-080I, J, and K for open enrollment that established the parents may apply for intra-district transfers with lottery-based enrollment and sibling priority. Districts report data, and denied applications have an appeal process. Section 5 amends AS 1403-253-B to specify that the State Board of Education must issue a decision regarding an appeal of the denial of the charter school application within 45 days instead of the existing 90-day requirement. Section 6 amends AS 1403-255C to specify that before a local school board terminates a charter school contract, written notice and a reasonable opportunity to remedy the issue is provided. Section 7 adds new subsections to AS 1403.255E and F that specify that a charter school may carry forward up to 10% of its unreserved budget with annual review of the year-end budget by the local school board. The local school board is directed to make the contract renewal process as simple as possible. Section 8 amends AS 1403-260A to increase the allowable administrative costs that a local school board can deduct when calculating a charter school's budget from 4% to 8%. Section 9 clarifies AS 1403-275 to specify that charter school contracts can be renewed for successive terms. Section 10 amends AS 1403-300 to add new subsections C and D that specify that school districts and the department must submit an annual report on correspondence programs covering allotment, demographics, fund use, assessment scores, and curriculum reviews, with the department forwarding reports to the State Board of Education. Section 11 amends AS 1407-168 to require that the report in Section 10D of the bill be included in State Board of Education's annual report to the legislature. Section 12 are conforming changes to account for the repeal of the Reeds Act. Section 13 increases the BSA $1,000 from $5,960 to $6,960. Section 14 adds new section of law, AS 1433-300, to require the department to create a model policy regulating non-school issued wireless device use in public schools with exceptions for medical, translation, emergency, or educational use. School districts must adopt and share a policy which must also have exceptions for medical, translation, emergency, or educational use. A school district may adopt the model policy established by the department, or it may adopt its own policy, defines wireless telecommunications device. Section 15 repeals the open enrollment provisions on July 1st, 2028. Section 16 adds a new section to uncodified law that establishes a legislative task force on education funding to analyze funding and accountability, make recommendations, and submit a report by the start of the second regular session of the 34th legislature. The task force expires on January 31st, 2026. Section 17 adds a new section to uncodified law that specifies that the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development must submit a report on recommendations to reduce regulatory and statutory burdens on school districts by the start of the second regular session of the 34th legislature, notifying legislators once available. Gotcha. Section 18 adds applicability provisions to uncodified law that specify that sections 5 through 9 of this act apply to contracts that are legally binding on or after the effective date of this act. Section 19 repeals the open enrollment provisions effective on July 1st, 2028. Section 20, conforming changes to account for the repeal of the Reeds Act. And Section 21 provides an effective date of July 1st, 2025, with exceptions to repeal provisions as outlined above.
Thank you, Representative Hemshute. And before we go further, I would like to acknowledge we have several representatives here with us today. We have Representative Sadler, Representative Story, Representative Underwood, Representative Elam, Representative Moore, Representative McCabe, Representative Schwanke, Representative Bynum, Representative Galvin, Representative Ruffridge, and Representative Cologne. Welcome. And with that, are there any questions for Representative Hemshute? Yes, Representative Vance?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I do have several questions, if you don't mind. I guess I'll start with why is there a repealer on the Open Enrollment Act for 2028?
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Vance. The idea there is it's a new way of doing things in the state, so forcing us to take a look at it in a few years and make sure that's how we want to continue was the intent behind the repeal.
Follow up. So since open enrollment is considered a new concept, can you explain that on what the how that's going to look, what the impact is?
Sure. Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Vance, Rebecca Himshute for the record. The way we envision it in the bill is that you have a right, a child has a right to attend the school that they're zoned in the larger districts. This doesn't apply so much in my district. But then if a family chooses a school outside of that zoned school, the child has the right to also go to that school with certain sort of guardrails on that, including a preference for siblings, so that if you're commuting and taking your child to another school and they both are of that age, they could both go there, and also limits based on space being available in the school that you choose.
Follow-up, Representative Vance.
How does this apply to correspondence students?
Madam Chair, I'm going to object. Are we debating the bill? We're in the process of adopting the committee substitute to begin debating the bill and amendments. And I'm hearing very sort of precision-based questions that really, I think, lend itself more towards debating the bill itself and the amendments.
Thank you, Representative Edgman, and I will agree with you. Representative Vance, if you could hold your questions until we actually adopt the CS, that might be preferable.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to understand the nuances, since some of these are newer concepts.
Right.
Madam Chair, I'll remove my objection to adopting the committee substitute.
Are there further objections? With that, seeing no further objections, we will adopt the CS as a working document before us. Representative Vance, would you like to... you can either continue your questions or you may move your amendment.
Well, I do have more questions. However you want the order to go, Madam Chair.
Why don't you move your amendment,
okay.
Representative Vance?
Okay, I move amendment number one.
Object. I'll object. For the purposes of discussion.
Oh, I thought you were going to give me the first
yeah.
one for free.
No such luck, Representative Vance.
We have to try. Okay, this amendment is I call it the transparency amendment. And some districts are already doing this practice, but not all of them. And what it does is it strengthens public accountability. It's making the financial information easily accessible. It ensures responsible use of state funds, encourages better fiscal oversight. It supports parents and education advocates, and it's simple common sense reform. And what it requires the school districts to provide their budget and audit on their website every single year, so that the parents and the public could go and be able to see firsthand what it is that their budget decisions are, how the audits went, and have a closer engagement. In the state, we often refer to it as the open checkbook, but this is just so that all of the school districts are making that available.
Is there any discussion on amendment number one?
Madam Chair, I have just
Representative
a couple Kopp. Thoughts. I appreciate the spirit behind this amendment. Some things I just want to bring before the committees. We always talk about the regulatory and statutory burdens on private sector and how we can do the same thing to the public sector, which drive up costs for both. Keeping that in mind, what kind of an administrative burden do we currently have, and what are the existing oversight mechanisms we currently have in the law? We know that our school districts are already subject to comprehensive annual audits by independent certified public accountants that ensure financial transparency. The amendment proposes withholding state funds if districts fail to meet new deadlines. That could potentially disrupt education services and create administrative delays. Just something for us to think about. We always talk about unfunded mandates. Are we making sure that, you know, the staff, the administrative support is there to provide something that maybe they're already doing, but in a more stringent way? And then potential redundancy. I think those are fair questions we should ask. Given the existing audit and reporting requirements,
does the amendment introduce a redundant process without significantly enhancing financial transparency or accountability? Those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Representative Costello.
Thank you. I want to thank the maker of the amendment. I really believe that in talking to parents and also educators, that the transparency of our school budgets is very challenging. We don't know where the money's going. We want the money to go into the classroom, but it's a very challenging process, and I think that this amendment will make that transparency more obvious to the stakeholders in our education system. So I'll be supporting it.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, I will maintain my objection. Will the clerk please call the roll for amendment number one?
Representative Edgemon?
No.
Representative Costello?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Representative Tilton?
Yes.
Representative Schrage?
No.
Representative Kopp?
No.
Representative Tilton, was that a pass or a yes?
Yes.
Thank you. Chair Stutes?
No.
3 yea, 4 nay.
With a vote of 3 yea and 4 nays, amendment number one has failed to pass. Representative Tilton, would you move your amendment, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number two.
Object.
Object.
Thank you. Representative Tilton, would you tell us about your amendment?
Certainly. While I'm very aware of the economic condition that the state is in, I also am very aware that every student deserves the right to feel like a whole student, and this amendment seeks to raise the multiplier for correspondence students from 0.9 to 1 to make them a whole student.
Is there a discussion on amendment number 2? Representative Edgemon?
Madam Chair, I think that every amendment we are going to see in this committee as well as later in the process will have some level of merit. Let me just start there. Yeah, the way I look at the bill as it's presented to the committee is that by increasing the BSA, all three components of public schools, whether the traditional brick and mortar schools, whether it's charter schools, or whether it's homeschooling, as this amendment proposes to address, all get an increase. So the bill as we have before us also has a longer-term component in terms of addressing public education and a number of components tied to the various state of K through 12 education and, again, all the facets of public education. So while I think this amendment is well-intended, I'm not going to be able to support it.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Edgemon. Is there further discussion? Representative Costello?
Thank you. Again, I appreciate the maker of the amendment for putting this forward. I've always believed that it's unconscionable that we count any child in Alaska as less than one, and so I am in support of this amendment and believe that it's something that we should give serious consideration to.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kopp.
So I firmly believe in school choice and competition in education, but there are some things we have to consider here is that our neighborhood schools do have fixed costs. They have fixed costs, facilities, teachers, transportation that many correspondence schools don't have. Correspondence education does cost less to operate, so it has a heavier lift to get to argue for a complete one-to-one funding ratio. We talk about fiscal responsibility and unnecessary spending, so we need to ask ourselves, you know, what is the total cost? And maybe one is too much, but you know, maybe there's an in-between place we could get to. I don't know the numbers. I don't know how many millions of dollars we're talking about here. But school choice doesn't require equal funding. We all have limited choice in our own life depending on our financial resources. We have limited public dollars for education. We want to provide maximum choice within the constraint of that. And we need to have multiple options in our system, but that doesn't mean that every option has to be funded the same, especially if it fails to recognize our brick and mortar school facilities, the transportation, and the teacher obligations we have in those facilities. So there has to be a balance in there. So I'm going to err on the side of fiscal conservatism and stay with the formula where it's at this point, but I'm certainly open to further discussion as this evolves and we have more information on that.
Thank you. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to highly disagree with the respectfully with the statements of the previous speaker because if I recall, our correspondence students make up almost a quarter of our students in the entire state of Alaska. And if we can't even consider them one whole student while we're considering dramatically increasing the base student allocation across the board, I think this is putting them at a great disadvantage. Our correspondence students are thriving, and we've seen an increase in correspondence students for a variety of reasons. I myself am a homeschool parent, and we give my children the option that when they get to high school, if they want to go up to and attend home or high school. And my children have chosen not to do that because they like the options. I understand that not every student wants to do that, and not every student should do that. But the fact that it makes up a quarter of our population, I think this is the time that if we're going to make an increase to improve the outcome of all of our students, that we need to be treating the correspondence students equally, at minimum, equal to one student. Because there are many other quantifiers that have them multiplied much more than equal to one. And by putting them as at least equaling a single student in the multiplier, I think it would show that we do respect them as students in the same manner that we respect the charter and the brick and mortar students. I could go on and on about the impacts and the flexibility that correspondence students reduce our class sizes. And I know that's a great concern in Anchorage. They are reducing the burden on the brick and mortar buildings. They're allowing a lot of different options, and especially in remote areas where there are fewer options. And people, I have people in my community who can't make it into town as easily, or maybe their student just struggles in the larger environment and they need the option of homeschool. So I want to emphasize the importance of this one amendment that we at least treat our correspondence students equal to one on the multiplier. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edgman, do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection.
I'll maintain my objection.
Okay, with that, with the...
I'm still getting into speed here, so I'll defer to Representative Shragi.
Okay.
I also objected, and I'll maintain my objection.
Okay. And with that, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Costello?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Representative Tilton?
Yes.
Representative Shragi?
No.
Representative Kopp?
No.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Chair Stutes?
No.
3 yea, 4 nay.
With 3 yea and 4 nay, Amendment number 2 has failed to pass. Representative Vance, would you move Amendment number 3, please?
I move Amendment number 3.
Object.
Representative Shragi, thank you. Representative Vance, would you tell us about your Amendment number 3, please?
Thank you. This is a robust amendment, so I will abbreviate the topics that it includes because we are focusing on the importance of our students' education. This highlights so many of the concerns that we're hearing from school districts and parents. So this includes student transportation, school bond debt reimbursement, the impact for increases for state boarding schools, it increased the correspondence study program, increases for vocational and technical education, the teacher retention and recruitment incentives, reading proficiency incentive grants, which I think is one of the most important factors in this, and then the mobile device policies, which I think most of us have come to agree that cell phones out of the classroom is going to help our students focus, and then public education reporting. So I will speak briefly to each one of those issues. It allows for school choice and enrollment transparency, and very similar to what's in the committee substitute, just a few nuances. But it has that the schools must publicly report the enrollment statistics, including vacancies and applications. And the difference is the Department of Education must create a transportation plan and appeal process for denied applications. This just makes sure that, parents feel that they're having a fair shake at that. Sections 3 through 5 has the charter school application process. It allows for a denied charter school application to appeal denials to the commissioner, and they can review the case and remand it and uphold the denial. That's something that is not available in a robust way right now. It is abbreviated, but what I'm hearing from parents is that they would like this process much more defined. What the new provision allows is the State Board of Education to authorize the charter schools. Section 7 is student transportation funding. This is something that is not currently included in the committee substitute that allows for per student transportation funding. This is a big request in my district, as my district not as robust as some, but it does require a lot of busing, and my school district specifically has asked for an increase separately in the line item on transportation because he doesn't want to take away from the base student allocation that we want to focus on the classroom. Sections 8 through 11 is school bond debt reimbursement, and extends this suspension to 2030 since we're in tough financial times, but it does create a path for that reimbursement. Section 12 is the boarding school stipends. Section 13 through 16 is the school funding formula adjustments. And this is something that parents have specifically requested, as well as our schools, that increases the vocational and technical education funding multiplier from 1.015 to 1.04. It removes the 90% cap on correspondence program funding, which we just spoke to, and then it sets the BSA at 6,260. Sections 18 through 19 is what I consider one of the key factors here, and that's the Reading Proficiency Incentive Grants. This section provides an additional $450 per student for improving reading proficiency. We're all so excited at the results that we saw of our kindergarten students showing that the Alaska Reads Act is having a positive impact. We want to give the additional funding for that encourages the school districts to really focus on this reading. We're going to provide the necessary tools that schools have been asking for additional funding for to implement the Reads Act better, and this covers grades K through 6. Originally that was K through 3, but we want to make sure that we are expanding that to the kids in elementary school. Section 20 is the mobile communication devices in schools that I think so many of us agree on. Sections 22 is teacher retention and recruitment incentives. A lot of teachers have said the bonuses work. We've seen this impact in our Trooper Academy. We've seen it in Department of Corrections. We've seen the Department of Transportation has had success in using bonuses, and so this has $5,000. This is one-time bonuses for full-time teachers in different districts. So it's $5,000, $10,000, $15,000. And then Section 23 is reports on public education that provides that to the legislature so that we can continue to take a look at the impacts of education and where we can work on finding the inefficiencies, helping with recommendations of public school funding, defining accountability, and then alternative performance metrics beyond standardized testing. This has been a hot topic that currently what we have isn't sufficient to see the progress and growth of our students, and so we want to make sure that we are asking better questions on how they're growing in their reading retention. And then lastly is the effective dates. So the key takeaway, and I thank you for your indulgence, Madam Chair, is that this amendment expands school choice, it modifies the charter school approval, it extends suspension of the school bond debt reimbursement for until 2030, short time, so we can get our fiscal house in order. It increases teacher bonuses. It bans most student phone use in schools, with few exceptions. It boosts the reading grants and vocational education funding and increases the boarding school stipend. So I thank you that for consideration of this. I know that it significantly alters the original bill. However, it brings all of the topics that that our school districts, our parents, our teachers, and Alaskans have been talking about as a need to be able to address education as a whole and bring the reforms that we need in addition to the funding.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Representative Edwin.
Madam Chair, thank you. So I have several concerns with this, and let me just start at the top. First off, as best as I can tell, Amendment number 3 proposes to sort of insert the governor's bill back into the bill that's before the committee. Maybe there's some provisions that are missing. I didn't see any. I didn't hear any, but I haven't had a chance to scrutinize the amendment fully in front of me. It comes with a price tag of $181 million, if I remember right. And apparently it would be in lieu of providing a BSA, which we have heard from school districts widely across the state, small, medium, large in size, as being their overarching desperate number one need, is to get more resources so that the local school boards employing local control can apply those additional funds in the manner that they best see fit. I think I would point out to the committee that in the working group that I was involved in with the governor's staff, bicameral, both members of the majority and minority caucuses in the House and the Senate, we talked about the need factor. And we had the Commissioner of Education in front of us, and we couldn't, Madam Chair, committee members, come up with a definition of what constitutes need, because there is no data outside of, you know, the local school district and schools themselves and parents and community members, you know, having the best sort of understanding of that. There's nothing quantitatively or qualitatively that can replace that sort of determination. You know, I want to also return back to the issue of local districts having local control. That is so paramount, in my view, as a representative for a rural district, but also as a longtime legislator, you know, looking at the constitutional requirements, looking at what we have in law, looking at the way school districts have always done their business. And that brings me to the charter school provision, because, again, going back to this working group that we had that hasn't unfortunately been able to meet in a couple of weeks or so, it was my understanding that the administration sort of decided to let that issue go in terms of pursuing a larger compromise that would enable funding to go forward, but also have some policy provisions that I think we're trying to advance in the bill before the committee. This would take us back to, again, the governor's original submission that I understood that, of course, he pursued at one point, but now is willing to sort of set aside. You know, the reading grants is really interesting, because when we passed the Reads Act back in the fall of 2022, that was predicated on having 43 reading specialists. Guess what? We have 8 now in the department. We really made that point, or tried to accentuate that point in the working group discussion, that, okay, if we're going to have grants at $450 for students that show proficiency between, you know, the fourth and sixth grade levels, why are we not spending time on getting more reading specialists? Because there are a lot of schools that won't be able to meet that bar and won't be able to qualify for those $450 grants, as this amendment purports to do, again, sort of part and parcel of putting the governor's bill back before the committee and the legislature. So I'm really concerned about that. The bonuses, $58 million for a 3-year period, 3 different categories, $15,000 bonuses, $10,000 bonuses, $5,000 bonuses. I've been concerned about this ever since we've seen this come before the legislature in 2024 and then Senate Bill 140, because, number one, I'm concerned that we would even be willing to uphold that $58 million for a 3-year period. We're already looking at a very, very constrained budget cycle this year in FY26, with oil prices not going through the roof, and needs and so forth just everywhere we look. But I'm also concerned in my district because I heard repeatedly my school districts want the bigger BSA. They want to be able to take that additional money and provide those bonuses to not only classified but non-classified employees, which is really critical. When I look at the morale issue, the school cook, the maintenance guy, the custodial staff, they should get a bonus too. This is just patently unfair, and this is why last year I vehemently disagreed with this because I didn't think it was fair, not to mention the fact that we can't sign a three-year promissory note to teachers to move out to rural Alaska and then not uphold that $58 million next year or the year after when the price of oil or the circumstances that we're building our budget on today could be far more dire than they are at the present. Lastly, I would say that in the bill before the body, we have a sort of a proviso, if you will, a longer-term pathway to looking at all these issues, taking a hard look at the state of public education, but also, very importantly, accountability factors. This is very critical because I think in terms of making major policy reform, you've got to be able to work, of course, in session during the legislative process, but you also need to have stakeholder engagement outside of the session because it's very laborious, it's very time-consuming, and there's a lot of details involved. And the public should be involved, right? All the school districts. So for all those reasons, I've probably talked too long. I can certainly point out a few other things. I think, again, this takes us a little bit afield of where we're at the moment, and I'm going to have to oppose it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. Further comments? Seeing none. Thank you, Representative Shragi. Will the clerk? I'm sorry. Did you have a comment?
May I wrap?
Absolutely, you may.
Thank you. And I only ask for that just to clarify a little bit about this amendment. This does increase the BSA at $300, and it's looking at our fiscal reality right now. Because I hear the concerns about being able to maintain some of the funding that is offered in this amendment. However, it does make it more realistic with our current fiscal situation. I want to keep in mind that the original proposal was $1,000 inside the formula. That's $250 million forever. And this makes a permanent increase inside the formula and puts it to where we have heard that the greatest need is, and that is for excellent qualified teachers, for more reading funding, for CTE to help our students succeed, the transportation funding. We're pulling out the scalpel here and saying we hear you, we hear the needs, and we want to make sure that we are very specific in how we're giving this money because you've requested it that way. I respect localized control. However, parents have said, please step in and be specific in how you're doing this because we're not feeling like we're seeing the funding used in the classroom and in the areas that we need it the most. And I think this is a great response to that. But this is looking at the fiscal responsibility on us moving forward because the reality is the price of oil will likely continue to go down. I want to make sure that whatever we give inside the formula, that we can maintain that. I highly agree with you, Representative Edgman, on the fact that we need to be able to keep our promises. That is a huge concern of mine on every decision that we have moving forward in the budget, and especially when it comes to education, because that the last thing that I want is that we make a promise of increasing the funding formula and then somehow we can't do it and we're having to cut services. I think that would put our schools at a greater disadvantage than if we were to be very purposeful in incrementally giving them money right now just because we're in a very volatile time in our budget. So I understand the perspective that is offered. However, I think we have to be very mindful in how we're giving the funding right now in response to the needs that have been presented to us.
Thank you. And with that, I am going to ask the clerk to call the roll.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Representative Tilton?
Yes.
Representative Schrage?
No.
Representative Kopp?
No.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Costello?
Yes.
Chair Stutes?
No.
3A, 4NAY.
With 3A and 4NAY, Amendment Number 3 has failed to pass. Representative Costello, would you please move your amendment?
Yes, thank you. I move Amendment 4.
I'll object.
Thank you, Representative Schrage. Representative Costello, tell us about your amendment, please.
Thank you. So this amendment deals with the Alaska Reads Act. I'm not really certain why we would get rid of a program that has been hugely successful in making sure that our young students are able to read. This would allow for $450 per child for grades K through 3, and then also to extend it to 6th grade, which would expand the program currently. Madam Chair, this was a bipartisan, bicameral measure that was passed called the Alaska Reads Act. We heard from the governor at the State of the State that it has been very successful in providing outcomes and results, which is what parents and students want and teachers want for our young people. This amendment is really important because it keeps something that has been successful in our schools, and I just urge your support for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Edgman.
Yes, with respect to the maker of the motion, I think it's, again, a well-intentioned amendment, and I think it deserves consideration, but the reason I can't support it is to go back to my earlier comments about the sort of the holistic picture of schools that wouldn't be able to qualify for this money, and the fact that when the Reads Act was passed in 2022, it's a measure that came with a $30 BSA increase, and I remember this very clearly, about $7 million, with about 65% of that going to the top five schools in the state. It didn't come with the appropriate amount of funding. The legislature put money in the budget last year that the governor vetoed for the Reads Act, which I found very curious as well, and if, in fact, we need money at this juncture. And then I go back to my earlier comments that a big part of it was House Bill 114 that passed in 2022, was built around that the department would have reading specialists that would travel the state and work with Title I schools and work with schools that didn't have the ability to bring on full-time reading specialists, because it's a very specialized position, as I understand it. And at this point, almost 3 years into the Reads Act, the department only has 8 of those reading specialists at hand, as opposed to the 43 that it envisioned. So why are we not addressing that part and getting to those schools who won't qualify for this grant, but who also need to be able to sort of measure up to the standards of the Reads Act? I think the last point I would make is that I didn't agree with the governor's comment that the Reads Act across the board is performing admirably, and maybe he didn't mean it across the board, but I have a lot of school districts in my district, and I represent a rural district again, who are really struggling with meeting the requirements of the Reads Act because they don't have the resources to do it. This will not be the means to getting them the resources necessarily, and so I'd like to keep this on the table to talk as we go through the larger debate on the state of public education, hopefully through this task force that will be established. But at this point, I'm not able to support it.
Thank you. Is there further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Kopp.
Yeah, I do support the spirit of this amendment, and the increase in reading at grade level, especially by grade 3, is critical. And I do laud the success. I think the fairness and equity about resources, that schools all are equally competitive and being able to improve and reach that is a good point that Representative Edgman brings up. I would like to, let this whole committee know I'm very likely to support Reads Act funding. Not at this time. I would like to talk to the maker of the amendment more before, see if we can get some commitment in the budget process for reading specialists in schools. It is significant if we have a lot of districts that simply are not competing for this on an equal footing. So right now at this time, I'm not supporting it, but I think the Reads Act has done good things for our schools.
Thank you. Further comment? Representative Tilton.
Thank Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to say thank you to the maker of this amendment and remind the committee and all the members here that reading is a fundamental piece of the education that can determine where a student will end up in. I think we all want the best education possible for our students here in Alaska, for all students, and I think that getting back to the basics of reading, which is a very important portion of your education to help you to move on, and especially for children getting up to third grade. So I would I support the amendment and thank the sponsor for putting it forward. I would also say that I believe that the Matsu Borough has had success using this program. So,
thank you. Further comment? Yes, I'm going to also make a comment, and I appreciate you're bringing forward this amendment, and I as well as coming from a rural school district, would have to agree with Representative Edgman in the fact of availability to some of these schools that is not provided for these kids. It's a real issue, and I can see that. But I am a huge supporter, and I was a supporter of the READS Act when it passed. I just think that it needs some fine-tuning, but I really appreciate this amendment. And in wrap-up, Representative Costello.
Thank you. I think that it is incumbent upon the legislature to support a program like this. Students who are not able to read are not set up for success in life. A child that moves through the education system who is not able to read suffers and is disadvantaged throughout the rest of their educational career. And it's something that I was very proud to support the Alaska Reads Act, and I want to thank everyone who was a part of that. I think it was one of the things the legislature did for education that we can be very proud of, and it's disappointing that we are moving forward without this program. Thank you.
Thank you. No further comments? Do you maintain your objection? Thank you, Representative Schrage. I'm going to ask the clerk to call the roll, please.
Representative Tilton?
Yes.
Representative Schrage?
No.
Representative Kopp?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Costello?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
Yes. At ease, Madam Chair, at ease.
Brief at ease. Back on record, we will void the roll, and I will ask the clerk to call the roll, please.
Representative Tilton?
Yes.
Representative Schrage?
No.
Representative Kopp?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Costello?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Chair Stutes?
No.
Four yay, three nay.
With four yay and three nay, amendment number four has passed. And with that, seeing no further amendments, do we have further comments from this committee? Representative Costello.
Yes, thank you. And I had a question on Section 13. This was the section where the BSA has been reduced to $1,000. And I wanted to just ask the sponsor to explain the rationale behind that and perhaps explain the funding source for this for the remainder that is left.
Representative Hemshut.
Thank you, Chair Stutes. Through the Chair, Rebecca Hemshut, House District 2. Thank you for the question, Representative Costello. As in good faith compromise, we brought the number down to 1,000 from the 1,808 that would restore funding to the purchasing power that districts, I'm going to say, enjoyed. It's not about enjoying, it's about needing. over the past decade plus. So when our districts were at their peak performance, they were also at their peak funding, which was 2011. And the 1,808 would have restored that funding, but over 3 years. So technically, it wouldn't have without the inflation proofing, because we'll have inflation marching on with or without us. So bringing it down to 1,000 for one time only, not one time only, let's not confuse that, 1,000 in the BSA as opposed to the 1,000 with the escalators was an attempt to compromise.
Further discussion? You have a follow-up?
I also wanted to know the plan for funding this BSA increase.
Thank you. Through the chair, Rebecca Hemshoot, House District 2. That's something that we as a body will need to figure out. Our finance committee has a lot of smart people. We have a lot of ways to do this. I will say that school districts cannot raise revenue. We have that power. They do not. I'll also add that we have a budget that is wide-ranging, whereas school districts are made up of 80 to 85% personnel. So when they cut the people who are working with our kids. When we cut, it's going to hurt no matter what, but it's not going to hurt in the same way, and it's not going to target makes it sound intentional. We have to do what we have to do. But when districts have to cut, what they're cutting are opportunities for our kids.
Thank you. Representative Chilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question in regards to the legislative committee that is being put together, the task force, and just what was the thought process behind the membership makeup?
Thank you, Representative Tilton. Through the chair, the first part of that, the purpose of the task force is that in all of our conversations around education, you'll hear people saying, well, what if and why don't and why can't? And it almost always comes down to how we're funding our schools. So the idea is that by giving the task force wide range to really explore how we fund our schools, we might be looking at adequacy, which we've done before, but not for a long time. We might actually look at the district cost factors, which we're supposed to do every 2 years. We could look at inflation proofing, which was taken out of the bill but is done in 10 other states. The task force could look at energy costs. We know that those are variable, but they're a fixed cost as well as insurance. Maybe there's an opportunity to pool. There are things that we might be able to do that are a little beyond the scope of what we can do in a single bill right now when our districts are crumbling. So this is an opportunity for a task force, a legislative task force, to reach out to stakeholders, reach out to our partners in education, and find what are the innovative solutions that are happening in other places, what are solutions that would work in Alaska, and then come back to us with recommendations. And it may require deeper study. For example, understanding if we're funding our schools adequately is not something that a group of legislators can probably figure out. Just like when we're dealing with oil, we go out to consultants to find out what we should be doing. We would do the same with education, is to find someone who deeply studies how schools are funded and ask them to come in and help us understand if our formula is performing and if our funding is adequate. I don't know if that answered the question completely.
Just to follow up, the group that was meeting previously and having quote-unquote negotiations, I don't know what you call it, conversations, discussion, compromise, was made up of two members of each caucus, and that's why I was my question and my concern, and was wondering about the makeup of this task force, which would just be six members, two from majorities and one from the minorities. So just wondering why you would cut down the minority representation.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Edgman.
Yeah, I would jump in and say that this is a pretty standard sort of format for putting a committee, a task force together. The thinking behind this amendment, in addition to the comments offered by Representative Hemshoot, was to keep it to legislators only. I think we had a really successful model with Alaska Seafood Task Force, where we kept the representation to bicameral, bipartisan sort of makeup, but that allowed all the stakeholders to come before it, as opposed to having a larger group that would spend a lot of time talking about things, as opposed to maybe getting to an end point where we actually have a product before the legislature. No disrespect to the great wisdom of stakeholders out there, for sure. But this is a model that has been used in many bills before us, and so we just sort of incorporated it into this bill subsequently.
If I might, Madam Chair,
Representative Hemshute?
Thank you. I'll just add through the chair that it says at least one member of the minority. So really, the chairs of both bodies could look at who best can fill those seats.
Further comments, Representative Tilton?
I think I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further comments? Seeing none, with that, I would, without objection, like to entertain a motion. Representative Kopp?
Madam Chair, I move to report the Rules Committee substitute for House Bill 69, LS0309/0, as amended out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Object.
There's been an objection. Would you like to speak to your objection?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I am excited that the adoption of the reading proficiency incentives were included in this committee substitute. However, I think there's still a lot of concerns. On the previous conversation of a new education task force, I'm wondering why we're doing that when we have education committees in both houses, both bodies, that are well equipped to do this work. You know, the changes in charter schools is a concern of mine, that we are increasing the bureaucratic cost, that the districts can now retain up to 8% of their budgets instead of 4%, and also that the carry forward will be capped at 10% of their unreserved year-end funds. I think that that's going to have an impact on the charter schools that needs to be considered. Our charter schools are succeeding. I want to help them succeed. The open enrollment overall, in it sounds good in this committee substitute. However, I feel like it's not making positive changes. I read it and was wondering what the change is of the current practice in our school districts right now. And it sounds good, but then it's also being repealed in 2028. So I have a lot of concerns about the current form of this committee substitute, and the greatest of which is how we're going to be able to afford a $1,000 inside the formula BSA increase that's $250 million automatically added to our budget every year, when we don't know what our revenue stream is going to look like right now. I do want to increase funding to education with reforms, but I think we're biting off more than we can chew in this committee substitute.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Was there another objection? Representative Tilton, would you like to speak to your objection?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just align myself with the comments from Representative Vance. They cover a lot of my thoughts, and I will still go back to the amendment that I provided for the correspondence. School homeschooling student. I feel very strongly that every student in Alaska should be considered as a whole student. I think that we all want to be sure that every student gets the best education that is available for every single student. I think we could start by showing that we value our students by making them a whole student. So along with the other things that Representative Vance mentioned, those are some of my concerns.
Other comments, Representative Costello?
Thank you. I just wanted to comment before the bill moves along in the process. I think that education is one of the most important issues that we address in the legislature, and I certainly have enjoyed my time in the classroom as a teacher, and I know we have tremendous amount of experience in the building and also in the minority, and so I just want to put on the record that it was disappointing that after the initial negotiations started, that the minority was then left out of that process, and I look forward to our voice being heard through the amendment process on the floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments?
I have just one comment.
Representative Kopp.
So the negotiation process was hosted by the governor. If anybody has got a complaint of who was invited or not, you know, that's who to take it up with. The second is that progress is real and inspiring on education right now. It is fragile and incomplete, but we're moving forward. It's good for the public to see. You need 61 people to agree on something to get anywhere. It's not easy to do. But, you know, we're making progress, and we all come with the perspective of our districts and but education is going to improve in Alaska. So I appreciate the bill sponsor bringing this bill forward and continuing to see it go through the process.
Thank you. Further comments? Seeing none, would you like to maintain your objection? Representative Vance?
Yes.
Thank you. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Schrage?
Yes.
Representative Kopp?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Costello?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
No.
Representative Tilton?
No.
Chair Stutes?
Yes.
5 yea, 2 nay.
With a vote of 5 yeas and 2 nays, House Bill 69, version LS0309/0, as amended, will move from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. And if members would please stay long enough to sign the document. And with that, the House rules will adjourn at 9:35.